Did you guys see that? So Europe posted that YouTube video in our group or whatever. The video of like so this guy created like a website, and you go there, you play a couple of games, and you get to claim free Bitcoin. And then it's like, so the in order to claim your free Bitcoin, you have to call the customer service line or something because the button doesn't work on the website. And then like this AI or whatever like just harasses this person and puts them on hold for 20 minutes and like, oh, I need to get my one Bitcoin. And they keep them on the line for like 30 minutes, you know, the whole music and stuff. And then they do this over and over again. And I find it amazing. Like they posted like that some people had, you know, called back 30 times, like 30 days in a row, you know, with, you know, sitting with customer service and whatever, because they can, they're going to get their free Bitcoin. Like this is the level of dimwittery that's out there. But,
I can hear Coach rustling.
Maybe Euro's down there. Maybe he can repost that YouTube video in the chat here so people can follow up and watch it. It's quite I think it tells you a lot about human nature though, and the type of folks that are like messing around with crypto.
Definitely.
Your website definitely needs to offer some free shit, like you know, like some sort of free coin that you just you know you. Maybe it's going to be worth something someday kind of thing. Because people will most definitely come and get it.
I agree. But everybody, I'm going to go to bed. So
why?
On that note, because I'm extremely tired. My HRV is probably like 2 at this point.
I can't wait to see how inferior it is.
Yeah. Well, I gave you an idea. And by the way, I was looking up.
How are you testing this, by the way?
Well, you need to buy a thing called a Whoop Strap now.
The Apple Watch is actually very accurate. No. I was looking it up, and a bloke tested it. A guy with an accent tested it, and it said that the Whoop Strap is the most accurate version of a HRV and heart rate monitor on a smartwatch. And I was like, well,
do you tie the Whoop Strap to like your balls or something? Like what is
no
like,
no
is
you
that?
Could
it's just a very thin wrist. Band.
You can put it in you can put it in your it's like a special boxers pouch you could put it
does
in
it,
you can
like,
put it
does it look a little bit gay or something like what like why
no
is it, there's an armband like my friend's a doctor a surgeon he has like an armband thing
yeah
there's an ankle thing as well or whatever
you can like hide it so you don't have to wear like the wrist the
yeah, you don't need the wrist. That was just that sucked for him. So there's like a wristband and an armband and an ankle band and stuff.
So
highly recommend health optimization.
You can track your sleep stages.
If you care about living longer for your kids, then get it. If you don't, then don't get it.
For real, I expect my HRV is about 10 after this week. Consistent not sleeping and drinking.
It's people a scale of what?
Rebounds pretty quick.
0 to 100, or what's the?
No, it's a 0 to infinity, basically. Average male. Well, it depends how old you are and stuff. It goes down with age, but average like I don't know, 30.
Infinity. What are you like having VTAC at that point? Like you're just like dying.
Well,
one heartbeat a day.
Get the paddles out. You know, like
probably population average is something around 50. For men and around 40 for women. But then it highly depends on your age and your level of activity and everything else. And something like the Whoop Strap, the sample population who uses that tend to be athletes or very health conscious, right? So it's like shifted up quite a bit. But yeah, I highly recommend like just and if you research HRV, it's just fascinating as well.
I just did a reading and it's 97.
Huh. HRV.
Yeah.
But like with what?
With the Apple Watch I found again that rematerialized.
Is it, what does it do though? Like how much time is it sampling and for how long? And
don't know. Let me find out.
The thing about the Whoop is it takes the HRV from the last, from like the stage of deep sleep in the last stage of sleep. So it's consistent over time.
Wait, whereas, if I start wearing this thing though, is it going to like convince me to exercise and shit or something?
It's going to give you a feedback to realize how injurious or beneficial your habits are, as in like maybe lack of sleep or maybe shitty diet or whatever else. And you're going to realize that you have the power to improve your own health and therefore get a bigger number, which is really good. Because in the, like for me personally, in the past, I was somebody who was just absolutely obsessed with increasing numbers. So I would do stuff like get obsessed with weightlifting. And then, you know, I was like worse than King Wabby is now. Not in a weird autistic way like he is, but just the obsessive nature of it. Trying to get a bigger number and trying to increase the weights and trying to get a perfect amount of protein in every day and stuff. And the issue with that is that you pursue the number at the exclusion of everything else. And by exclusion of everything else, I mean something like your capacity to feel good on a daily basis, your capacity to recover, your capacity to have a normal life where you're having a balanced life, like a social life and everything else. And just like,
yeah, who needs that shit when your HRV is 70, right?
But it's like with HRV, if you get obsessed with that instead, it incentivizes balance and incentivizes relaxation and incentivizes recovering and incentivizes doing today what you can do more or equal of tomorrow.
So which you're is really, feeling really like good. This will play on your otherwise like so optimizing this will play on your obsessiveness about
this is a way to use my natural experimental obsessiveness to actually optimize my health, which is like unique. Like it's unique and fantastic as a measurement that it even exists. Because if I do way too little sleep, or if I overstress myself, or if I do way too much activity, my HRV will tank, right? There's a consequence on the nervous system reflected in HRV of overdoing it, which I would not see if I was merely going for running further and faster every day, right? Or something like that, some superficial performance goal. So for me, it's really fascinating. And then if you take a deep dive into the research and stress resilience and health outcomes and everything else, it becomes just utterly fascinating. So I've convinced about 20 people to get it, including ears and including girls and including half of Delphi and including whoever else. So it's kind of funny now. And you should get it too.
I just didn't
convince half the Delphi people for some reason to do this.
But like seriously,
maybe they'll create like a better DeFi protocol or some shit, right?
You should get
ECG.
It.
ECG. Oh, ECG to earn.
You should get it though, Sefi, because like I know from experience talking to you that people like me and you don't really have many pleasures. We're sort of just like kind of nerdy. Like maybe there's a house and a car or something, but beyond that, like what do you spend it on? Like some speakers or something? You deserve it. You deserve a
not
pleasure.
Much.
You deserve
like,
to quantify
I don't
yourself.
Buy too much shit, really.
Exactly. I'm sure you can do it like a $200 watch or something.
Oh, asking people or like tracking people's HRVs. Like, you know, Stepin was like, oh, how many steps did you do in a day? You get a pair of shoes. What about HRV instead of steps?
Yeah, could do. One thing I'm doing business-wise is I'm writing an HRV maximization course, by the way. This is also why I've been kind of obsessed with it lately. So the things I've done and know about and researched to actually produce a noticeable increase in HRV and whatever is like happening underlying. So things like breathing exercises and whatever else.
I think this is interesting.
Now, where do you, you're doing a course or it's like an online thing that you pay for?
The way I'm planning to do it is a month-long course, and it delivers 2 to 3 videos every week, and they're about 10 minutes long each. And then it goes through what HRV is, the underlying principles of it, the correlates, what it reflects, and then it goes through three different pillars of how to maximize it based on stuff like well-researched stuff, from stuff like breathing exercises and meditation to stress resilience techniques to the best stuff for cardiovascular fitness that increases this particularly, which is like aerobic training. And then it also spends some time going into things like devices, which are quite interesting. Like there are loads of devices that can modulate your nervous system, right? Like things like watches. Like if you look up a thing called an Apollo Neuro watch, Sefi, it's like a watch that vibrates and it has a really interesting effect. It is, has been proven on many through many studies to raise HRV. And it's something to do with the fact that vibration and touch can stimulate the nervous system and shift it towards more parasympathetic mode.
But your brain kind of needs like an intermittent, like not shock to the system, but like it's the vibration of the watch is what? It's like, it's just randomized so that
I don't know exactly like the frequency or hertz or whatever, but it's like a low level kind of pulsing vibration that is just outside of peripheral awareness.
Oh, okay. So it's more constant. But it's not meant to be noticeable. Pulsing.
I think it's about like six pulses a minute, and it goes in and out in intensity. And this all has something to do with the fact that vibration and touch has a fundamentally relaxing effect to the nervous system. And I think that's something to do with like since we're very young children, right? To be held and rocked by your mother. There's like when a young child wants to cry or something like that, when they want to cry or when they're really upset or when they're overwhelmed, there's something in the process of contacting the mother or the parent and being held by her and rocked and this kind of thing that is dissipative. It's like because the child is young and small, it needs the wider, larger nervous system of the mother to diffuse itself or to dissipate. So we're all like, our nervous system is on many levels modulated by touch and can be relaxed by touch and vibration. And studies now have looked at these different devices and putting people on vibrating platforms and watches and different things like that. And it's been proven quite repeatedly that having pulsing vibration at a low level on your skin can shift you towards more relaxation and like parasympathetic mode, which is like really interesting. So there are devices like this you can get as well, and also things that will like pulse there's a thing called a TENS device that will pulse electrical signals into your ears, and then there are weird vagus nerve devices which was like you can put on your neck or your chest or something, and all of these things have had like a mild effect. So it's interesting.
Yeah, did y'all see them watches that will like shock you to wake you up? That's rather
no pleasant. Might be a bit different. At one time, Matt, I bought the world's loudest alarm clock, which was fucking funny, because I'd have it on when my like girlfriends or whatever came over, and
I had a buddy who was in college. He was deaf, and he had one of those things, and it like shook the. You had the one that shook the bed.
Exactly. So it was. I think it was a thing called, if I remember the name correctly, it was a thing called like a sonic boom. And it was about $150 off Amazon. It was the loudest fucking thing I could get. And the reason I got it is because I really wanted to fix my sleep pattern, right? I was like for years I've been going to bed at like 4 a.m. or something. And I'd always lost track of the time. So I thought I needed to be brutal with myself in the morning. Like if I can at least get up at the right time, then I might be tired at night. So I bought this fucking thing and it was massive. And it was so fucking loud. I threw it away like a few weeks ago, actually. It was so fucking loud, and it had a massive vibration plate, which you slide right under the bed. And then every morning at that time, it's like, brr, 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 shakes the whole fucking bed, like vigorously and like violently. So I had this thing, like I'd have, at the time I was a bit of like, like a player bachelor kind of person. So I'd have one night stands and stuff, and I'd have this fucking thing on. it would vibrate the fucking girl I just met out of bed. And then on top of that, I was doing weird shit. Like I always tape my mouth at night and stuff. Like I put tape over my mouth so I breathe through my nose at night and do this weird like fucking self-development stuff to optimize my health. So in the morning, the girl would wake up like having just met me. and my whole fucking bed would vibrate, and she'd look at me, and I'd have my mouth sealed up with tape and stuff. It's pretty fucking weird.
That's one way to get rid of her.
I had a girl once where I taped my mouth shut with tape, and then I looked at her, and she realized like what I'd done, and she was like, "What the fuck are you doing? What the fuck is that? Why have you taped your mouth shut?" And then I was like, "I do it every night," like, speaking through the tape. I was like, "I do it every night. I've done it for 5 years." And she was like, "I'm fucking leaving if you don't take that off, because I'm not going to be able to sleep. I'm going to be horrified that you're going to suffocate in this in your sleep and die if you do that." So she refused to sleep. And then in the middle of the night, like after I'd fallen asleep, she fucking ripped it off without me knowing. Bitch, I never saw her again.
Yeah, that would end it right there for me. You can do whatever, just don't take the tape off my mouth.
Exactly. Jesus. I'm trying to optimize my breathing. I'm trying to have nasal breathing only.
Yeah, I'm trying to have a healthy lifestyle.
This is going to tank my fucking HRV. What are you doing? Get the hell out.
Don't make me choose between you and the HRV, because the HRV wins every single time.
But yeah, like I have a weird like experimenter nature, constantly experimenting with stuff. I bought a fucking weird device this week, which you put on your neck and stuff for HRV. And then I've tried like 100 different breathing methods and all kinds of stuff. So I basically should write the course at this point.
Speaking of random girls, I messaged Tiffany, you know, Tiffany Fong, you know, she's done all the funny little, SBF kind of follow up shit and got this massive following. So remember, I don't know if you talked to her before. I don't remember if you were on when we were on Space with her.
I spoke to her in a space before.
Anyway, we were just kind of fucking around at one point and kind of got to know each other. And I was like, all right, we need to have like, cause she's funny and she has like a bunch of funny fucking like stories from the SBF crisis or whatever. And the courtroom and all that drama. It'd be fun to have her on. And just like, I was just like, you, me, and like ears and and Lucas and whatnot. Like, get everyone to just kind of like shoot the shit about that whole thing. It'd be a lot of fun. So I kind of messaged her and said, hey, like, let me know when you want to chill and do something. Just for pure laughs. No special crypto research or any other of that shit.
Is there anyone you want to like, hook up
with? I thought you meant hung out with her in person. She might have took it the wrong way.
Oh, no. I'm talking about like, no, I kind of said like, let's get this group together and like do a Twitter space and just fuck around and have fun. I knew her before she was like popular or whatever. So it's fine. Like, she's not going to be like, oh, he's some stalker or something.
Oh, Anne wants to speak, but he needs to request to speak, Anne. Said she wants to say something.
Oh, that's a good point.
I suspect it's something about touch and vibration and lips, yes, kiss and stuff.
Yes,
because I remember last time I went on a rant about nasal breathing and was like, "Can you use your mouth to kiss?"
Mm-hmm. I remember, and she's also mentioned that we should have met up. When I went to Amsterdam, and that's true. We probably should have.
Both of us should have met up, because I lived there and you were there temporarily for Solana Breakpoint.
It's really dumb that we didn't see each other.
Pretty dumb, yes.
What? So you decided to go to a Solana conference now? What did they say there?
Oh, I don't know. I just walked in.
My ears were doing about a partnership with Yuga Labs or something.
Ears were doing like networking that stuff and deal making. And I was just like chilling out. I really liked the render presentation. That was my favorite presentation.
Yeah, I liked how the girls on the door didn't care that I didn't have a ticket. And I just walked in and I did it multiple times. Even though it costs about $600 or something, this thing is expensive. But they just let people just walk in and out. Who cares? Just listen to the talks. But you know, they're all the same. All these conferences are the same thing. You just do like speed dating with autists.
Where did Anne go? Didn't she just come up and then, I don't know.
It shows, oh yeah, she disappeared.
She might be trying again.
Yes, I wanted to say something about HRV. Hello, by the way. Hello, Bruce. Hello, Ox. Oh, Ox disappeared.
No, he's still there. His name is Thorchain, PR department.
Yeah, he's PR department.
Oh, are you? Is your profile picture changing all the time?
Yes, yes. He's just highlighting the fact that he's a superstar.
He was hired by Thorchain and whatever. So now he's got like all sorts.
In his space all the time, but I see his profile picture changing all the time. So I thought, what is he doing with the book? Okay, whatever. But I think you all know I just recently got a grandson. And I mentioned that when I have a watch, it's a Samsung smartwatch, and it measures really everything, literally everything. You see,
did you connect it to the baby grandson?
No, I can't.
Does your watch tell you when you're breathing?
Sorry?
Does your watch indicate that you're breathing?
Yes.
What does it have your heart rate?
Yes, everything. It measures
everything. And how many calories you consume?
Sorry?
Does it tell you how many calories you consume in your food?
How your child? Sorry, I can't. Can someone say what he's saying? I can't.
No, it wouldn't be possible to track the calories consumed in food.
Yes, it. Well, you have to. It measures your. Yes, it measures your calories.
What you can track is the calories you burn.
Yeah, you burn, and then you can type in what you have been eating, and then it will calculate how you have. How much you have been burned, etc. So,
that's incredible.
Yeah, it messages in your blood the oxygen in your blood.
Oxygen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have to trick your finger to get blood?
Oh, your voice is really I cannot hear it very well. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have to remove because it makes no sense in this. Strange.
Well, what I wanted to say is I think oxytocin is a very good thing to get a better HRV heart rate, well, whatever.
Wait, does that mean I have to have someone suck on my boobs or what? Like, how does this work?
Well, yeah, it means boobs.
I thought HRV was like a trans thing that medicine they take.
Exactly. What it means is that, like, if your wife hasn't given you affection for a few days, you can clearly show her the chart of what she's doing to you.
Yeah.
Oh, ooh. Yes. A new application.
Yes.
I do this all the time. I show them the chart and I look, look what you've done. Look what you've done.
Right? Smoke marijuana and take oxytocin.
Oh, I don't think oxytocin will be produced by smoking marijuana, but it can be. But I know for sure that it will be released by children drinking milk, and because of that, boobs are soft and there's coming sweet milk out of it. And if men are touching boobs, oxytocin will be released. And the same thing actually is happening to women when they touch their own boobs. But this is really...
It's a great injustice in nature.
Yeah.
That women can release their own oxytocin, but we can't release our own oxytocin without women.
There's another argument for this.
Yeah. So when... so when my grandson was born, I really had a very bad sleep. I slept I was in spaces until 6 o'clock in the morning and whatever, because I couldn't sleep. And now my grandson's born, and I'm like a little bit more like a chill or something. A little bit more at ease, because I'm comforting him all the time and giving him feed and a bottle and bathing and soothing him and taking care of him. And it really does help if you have connection with just a physical connection with another body, and especially children. I think they will do something with you that's very, that will make you very at ease and make you very happy. And that was something I wanted to add to the conversation. So that's all, actually.
So I need to get a Whoop. I need to put it on my wrist, and then I need to go find a baby to hang out with.
Yes.
No, try it for a year, Sophie. I think it's like, what do I pay? Like $200 a year or something. But if it sucks after a year, just get rid of it. Who cares? But you won't, because you got addicted like me, because you're an obsessive tweaker like me. And
what
now
kind of weird things have you done after getting it? Like has it made you?
I've bought I constantly experiment with meditation and breathing and stuff, because I taught that for years, right? And I've probably explored about, 20 different breathwork techniques, at least 10 different meditation techniques. I've bought all kinds of strange devices to entrain brain waves and things, things that you would call a mind machine. There are loads of these things, and they basically entrain your brain waves via flashing lights and auditory tones, like binaural beats and flashing lights in a visor. I bought a lot of these things. I bought a thing called a TENS machine, which is meant to somehow interrupt the stress response by pulsing electric signals into your ears. I've bought the thing I described earlier called the Apollo Neuro. I've bought like a fuckload of different things like this. I've experimented with different forms of training, like cardiovascular training, like aerobic or high intensity interval training versus steady state versus everything else. I've experimented with different diets and the effect on HRV with that stuff. Like probably like six different diets, and also eating times, hydration. I've experimented with
Do you ever fast?
Say it again.
Any fasting?
Like intermittent or long term?
No, like either one. Like I do a little bit of intermittent fasting, and it does help out a lot.
I do a 6-hour eating window right now, so I eat from 2 to 8 every day. And then in the past, I've done like 3-4 days of not eating. Also, when I lived as a Buddhist monk, we only ate once per day for half an hour at like 11:30.
Do you take like vitamins when you go on like those 4-day fasting?
I've only done it like twice when I was in India, but no, I never did when I was. I just had water.
Oh, it's just something I forgot to mention. There's like a universal hertz, like the noise that's coming from the universe.
You mean the Schumann frequency, 7.8 hertz?
I think so. And if you put your headphones on, like that, you can hear it in both ears, and you search for that hertz.
Kind of like a seashell when you put it up to your ear.
Yeah.
There's a thing you can look up if you want to go scientific on this, Safi, a thing called audio-visual entrainment. And it's this interesting fact that when you play sounds and lights of certain frequencies and you stimulate yourself with them, your brain tends to sync up to it. As in the fundamental brainwave frequency of your brain, like the alpha waves or delta waves or beta waves or whatever, that are associated with different states. It tends to sync up to the external stimulus. And there's this whole body of research which is really interesting about this stuff. So I mess with these machines.
It makes sense that should happen. There's probably some reaction. I don't know. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing, but like it makes sense that should occur.
It does. And visual is about 90% more powerful than sound, by the way. But it's, I experiment with this stuff to like, so one of my incentives was that I spent 18 months in Buddhist monasteries meditating and stuff like that. But most people don't want to do that. Most people just want to feel better ASAP. And I was kind of curious about how you would accelerate the effects of meditation, and how you would get people to feel better straight away. Because I had, like, I don't know, 100, 150 meditation clients over the last however many years, over a period of about 4 years. And I bought these machines to mess around with that, to see if I could induce some shift in myself quickly. Probably the most fascinating thing I bought was a thing called a David Delight Pro, which is made by a company called, I think, Mind Alive in Canada. And it's a thing that it has like a visor, and it flashes a light in your eyes, and it also has headphones, and it flashes.
It's that thing that looks like a Walkman. But yeah, it plays the sunglasses too.
You can look it up. It plays an auditory beat, and then it also has a TENS machine connected to it as well, which is ear clips that pulse electrical signals into your brain. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but it's been tested in people with PTSD and stuff. But it basically it's like a low level electrical signal pulsed through both ears at a certain frequency, and doing that seems to somehow interrupt a stress response. I'm not sure exactly how it works. Somehow interferes with the ongoing signals or what. I don't know how it works, but they've had success with PTSD and anxiety and trauma and stuff.
Bruce, yeah. It's not in your ears, it's on your cheekbones. It works the frequencies. The headphones are not like in ear, but they are like on your
I know what you mean, but there's many things, and I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about a device that simultaneously plays binaural beats through your ears in alignment with the visual thing, and it is auditory, it's ears. But you can also get things like bone stimulation devices for vibration or bone headphones and all kinds of shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the funny thing is, if you have a device that you can play like in one ear, like one frequency, and in the other ear, such another frequency, so two different frequencies, and then your brain.
That is what binaural beats are. It's an interesting phenomenon, Steph. You can research it a little bit. But if you play, say, a 110 hertz frequency in left ear and 100 hertz frequency in the right ear, the auditory effect is that you hear 10 hertz. Yeah. And the auditory effect is also that your brain syncs up to that differential, that 10 hertz, which is alpha waves.
Hmm. So you're doing this in headphones, and you just have the two different tones you're playing.
Well, what you want to do is get on like Google Scholar or something and look up audio visual entrainment and just do a deep dive. But the point was that I've bought like all these fucking things and messed with them and played with them and seen the effect on meditation and seen the effect on HRV and heart rate and everything else. I think the core things are like sleep pattern, diet, having some kind of relaxation habit like breathing or something. I got massive gains out of breathing exercises. Actually shifting my long-term baseline breathing over time by doing breathing exercises was big. And then the rest is sort of a bonus, but you can definitely increase it. I think for most people, they would probably get a lot out of sleep optimization. They probably get a lot out of dietary optimization in terms of not eating about 5 hours before sleep. They would get a lot out of breathing exercises and a lot out of like steady state aerobic training.
Was this before the tape over the mouth or after?
I've done the tape thing for like, I don't know, 5-6 years now. And that was when I first took a deep dive into breathing exercises and stuff. And I realized that I was basically breathing through my mouth all the time, which is really bad, right? It's like a habit I formed when I was quite young and I'd been doing every night during sleep for a long, long time. Breathing through your mouth all the time means you're de facto hyperventilating most of the time, keeping yourself in a stress state.
Snore with the tape over your mouth?
Girls say that sometimes I do weird shit like go like that or something, but most of the time, no. Most of the time it cuts it because snoring is mouth breathing. And often the worst parts of snoring is like the collapse of the the oral tract when you're over breathing. So that's like apnea. But yeah, like it pretty much cuts it completely. So one of the first things with breathing, if you want to optimize it, is to never breathe through your mouth, unless you're eating or speaking. That's pretty much the only times, and kissing, as Anne says. And then the next thing is to systematically
slow CPR your... in somebody, Anne?
Yes, that as well. Oh, and Matt, I wanted to say something to you because you were speaking about intermediate fasting or whatever. If you do it like, if you don't eat for 16 hours, like, then, and you do it every day, you eat your latest meal at 6 o'clock, and then for dinner, for example, and you wait 16 hours, you do that every day, then your body is going to like, going into a burning and not burning phase.
Because I kind of got it to where right now, like I'll just eat supper. Like I tried the 48-hour fasting and stuff because, like, I don't know about y'all, but America, we got some real fattening food, especially in Louisiana. Like there's fried shit everywhere. So I'm like 30-some years old, 33, and it started catching up to you. You know, you start getting a little dad bod going on. So I've been trying to slim down a little bit.
Yeah, but if you try this 16 hours diet, it's not a diet, but you can eat everything. No, just eat healthy. But your body starts burning if you wait 16 hours before your next dinner. And then it will burn again. And then because if you start fasting, like your body is going into a slow metabolic state. So
yeah,
if you do this,
I'll just skip supper and like dust off a whole row of Oreos and go back to sleep.
Back on this like audio idea, there's a couple of interesting, like one is a project and one is kind of an anecdote. But so, Bruce, did I tell you about these kind of like 50 hertz, you know, 55 hertz speakers that I built? It's like a very specific.
Yeah, and I would guess as well the vibration stimulus plus some kind of whatever entrainment effect of that particular frequency has some effect that makes it more than just sound, right?
It's so like
stimulation.
Yeah, there's something about, so also it's the vibrating frequency of your chest wall is, you know, typically right around that like 50 to 60 hertz range. It probably varies depending on, you know, how fat you are or whatever, you know, like slight differences in people's bodies or whatever. But basically I built these like 55 hertz speakers that sit behind your seat. So I kind of have this like really complicated home theater thing that I built. It's quite impressive. It's like probably one of the coolest ones, you know, among the coolest like rooms like this in the United States, probably. It's like, it's really impressive. It's not like, I'm not just making this up. It's like, it's really cool. I was playing with electronics and speakers and shit since I was a little kid. So I put in these 55 hertz things that sit behind the seats. And what the benefit of this is that whether it's you listen to music, like if you go to a club or if you're listening to a movie or whatever, there's something about that specific vibrational frequency. And you don't need very much power to do this when it's really close to your body. Like if you have it far away and you're trying to boost this, like psychometric studies and things have shown that, like, you know, and they do this in car speakers, like in, you know, car systems, they'll boost like right around that range, but under 100 hertz, they'll start ramping it up all the way down to like 20 hertz. But the 55 hertz area is like that kind of like that punch, that bass feeling where, like, and clubs usually take advantage of that too, like nightclubs and stuff. It's not the lowest bass frequencies, like 20 to 40, to give you like that thunder feeling. It's like the frequency necessary to vibrate your chest just right. And it's a very, very cool like experience. Like it feels great when you listen to music and things with this. It feels more visceral, more real, more like engaging somehow. And it's not like you really hear this sound, you know, below around 80 hertz, you know, most sound, you don't really hear it so much. You feel it, especially below 40 hertz. But that 55 hertz, you could hear it if you jack it up. But the idea is to put it right at the right level where it's hitting you in the back, basically, and giving you just kind of this sense of like almost like you're, there's not even a right word for it, but it just has like a punch feeling to
like
it.
Like a resonance.
Yeah. And and so that's an interesting thing. And another thing is, so I bought this car recently. So it's this this Porsche 718 Spyder. It's just like fucking amazing thing. Like it's got the roof off. So, you know, obviously it's convertible and all that. And what's interesting about that is that like the engineers that built this car did a lot of work. And you can tell that it's like very specific tuning work to get the exhaust to sound just right. It's not like the people that like make a really loud exhaust sound out in the, you know, you go into the streets of the whatever city you're in, and like, you know, people just play it, make it loud. That's not the idea. It's just like this slight grumble that just has the right tone to it. It's almost like they they tuned the maybe the radius of the exhaust and all those other nuances. And what they do is they make it so that it really, really feels just visceral when you're actually just hitting the accelerator or, you know, downshifting or whatever. And exactly. There's an art to that. And like having driven this, like there's nothing like this I've ever driven in my life. Like I've never felt that had this much fun with a vehicle. Normally I don't really care about cars. I had my shitty Jeep for like 10 years, like, you know, with like hail damage on it. And I didn't really give a shit, but there's something about this. My son is more into cars and stuff. He's like, Dad, you got to buy this one. I'm like, okay, well, like, fine, I'll go buy it then. I don't know. There's something very interesting about the sound of the thing that you can tell someone paid a lot of attention to, and it's like it's like an art form. Like, and myself having done like sound work, or you know, building my house and everything else. Like, I understand. Like, this didn't happen just on happenstance. Like, this was engineered this way, and it's engineered to feel amazing.
I can see how that would be like the final trajectory as well, right? It's like to start with, you might go for something like performance or loudness or the particular frequency of the exhaust or something. Then over time, it's like, what are you actually doing with all this stuff? Like, what effect are you trying to have? And the effect you're really trying to have is create a really optimal experience for the person driving, right? For the user, such that they say, this car feels unlike anything else. And then along that trajectory, you stumble across this idea that like, you're actually trying to do everything you are doing to optimize the feeling of the nervous system. Right, like to create whatever effect you're talking about—the resonance, the relaxation, the sort of strange feeling of rightness that arises when you're pressing the accelerator or something. But yeah, like I think that's absolutely a study they've done and optimized. Definitely.
And Bruce, do you know how they studied it with deaf people? People who can't hear.
In a lot of ways, I think, Anne. But the research on vibration and sound. And light and the way they all stimulate the nervous system is really vast now. Like I've taken a deep dive through a lot of it. It's really vast and interesting. So yeah,
you've noticed me say this before. Like I don't tend to like a lot of you know, random noise. Like even inside my house, it's like the ambient you know, sound is like something usually south of 30 decibels or something like that. I built the thing to be super quiet. Like the house is actually on a bedrock where like it's far enough away from other streets and things that even car noise that translates through the ground, you know, I like it to be, I like not necessarily like, what do you call it? The anechoic chamber where it's, you know, it's hyper quiet necessarily, but there's like a point under which like it feels really, really pleasant right when you're in that zone. And also like even in the design of the spaces in my house, like, acoustics played a role in the sense that like most of the walls and ceilings are not simply flat. There's surface materials on everything to create a diffusion effect, which really feels good. Not just in like a theater space, but just all the rooms. There's a magic to like that working well too. Like if you go to certain commercial spaces, certain restaurants and certain places that are designed really, really well, and they've considered all this, I don't know if your food tastes better or, you know, like the experience just feels different when you can hear the person across from you and you can hear them speaking clearly and them not having to raise their voice. And even the din of like a lot of people talking doesn't bother you that much because it just has the right amount of absorption and diffusion in the room. It's a magical thing when you have like acoustic spaces. Like,
there's when a restaurant really hits the lighting and the acoustics perfectly, and there's a sort of a segregation and a nice, like almost like a candle lit cave like lighting to the whole thing, and also when you can hear the person across perfectly, but the rest in the room is sort of a pleasant murmur, like a nice resonant, like vibratory murmur that doesn't interfere with the conversation. I've noticed like this before in the past, especially with more high-end restaurants. They've optimized the hell out of it. And it's all like it's all sort of the surrounding stimulus, the restaurant and the way it's designed to reflect sound and whatever else, just is absolutely optimized to sort of soothe your nervous system and make you feel good. And then the food ends up tasting good because you're in such a great state. And in reality, it might not taste that great at all, but somehow like the vibe of the place has been great.
It's the function of like how memorable that spot is with the acoustics and everything. Like a good example, when I went to Hawaii last month. So in Maui, there's this place called Mama's Fish House, and it's the food is phenomenal. And, you know, it's like usually quite difficult to get in. Because the fire's there and in Maui, the tourist traffic has gone down, so I was able to walk right in and get a table. But so at Mama's Fish House, they have like the beach is right outside, like the north shore of Oahu is right there, and like there's something about like just the waves of the ocean coupled with like the ambiance of the place, and every part of the place is structurally like the it's like an outdoor sort of like I don't know, sort of tiki looking place, but when you use like that grass material
cafe environment,
kind of, but more like the sounds are more natural. So like the tiki sort of material or whatever that grassy material they use, or like the cobblestones on the ground. I tend to notice this sort of stuff because I build buildings and things, but like the acoustics, when you have all of these sort of bumpy surfaces coupled with like the ocean nearby and everything, it really like, I don't know that the food this time was as good as I remembered it the first time. The first time I was like, ooh, this food's so amazing. I think it's partly because the experience made me feel that way. When I went back with my expectations really high that this food's going to be awesome. I mean, the food was good, but at the same time, I realized, wait a minute, maybe my memory of this was partly just the general experience and not necessarily just the food itself. Kind of what you were saying before.
Exactly. Yeah, I find this stuff really interesting. Like, designing the environment or the sensory input to optimize the feeling. Like it's sort of what I've experimented with as well, like all these devices and things. It's like, hang on, what's the effect of this? What's the effect of that? What if I raise the frequency? What if I lower it? What if I play with this? What if I play with that? Same kind of thing you're doing in a different way, Sefi.
Yeah, I think like what it is the people that appreciate this sort of thing notice this in the places that they're in. And then, you know, like I take it a little step further, maybe to the extreme where it's like, I'd like to replicate this. It's all like build a place that, you know, reflects this sort of idea.
I think it impacts most people. Most people would just say it's great here. Like this feels like home or something. And they wouldn't really
another
know.
Person's like, oh shit, I got to build this myself. Like I have to.
Yeah. Like, most people wouldn't know how to dissect it exactly. They would just say it might have good energy or something.
I think when you get into technical features of it, like it takes a sort of like lifetime of built up, maybe a combination of intuition, like maybe some native talent towards these types of things. And you know, the funny thing is like, I wasn't necessarily ever great in say music. Like, I play the keyboard a little bit and kind of like monkey around with synth sides and some music and stuff. And I get it. I understand what makes some of that great. But at the same time, I've never been great at making it myself. On the other hand, creating a space where music sounds good, I feel like I can do that quite well, which is weird. Like, so I'm not a musician, but like whatever you call that, you know, I don't have any formal sound engineering type of training or something, but I've read a lot about like, I've gone down that rabbit hole quite extensively over many years. And, I think the amount of time it takes to accumulate that understanding is not short. Like you really have to. I don't think it's just anybody that has that capability. I think
you can definitely
a short list of nerds that have this, like, or whatever, like that type of talent for listening for it and whatever it is.
You can definitely develop sort of a sensory sensitivity by training, which is quite interesting. Like, I, you know, with the breathing stuff I've talked about lately, it was interesting to watch my own journey through learning breathing exercises and doing it long term, because I basically realized that I had like a baseline level of hyperventilation all the time from long term mouth breathing and stuff. And then I started to retrain it in myself. And for a while I did like 2 hours of breathing exercises a day. But the interesting effect of that long term wasn't just like the effect on me. It was also this weird constant awareness I have of it. So if my breathing slightly increases or slightly decreases, I'm aware of it. And also, if I'm in a room with four people, I'm aware of all of their breathing. And I almost can't help it. It's like it's this weird, weird level I'm operating at, where I've trained something so much. I've trained so much awareness in myself about this one thing that it's almost like it's almost as obvious to me as somebody's words and speaking. I'm just aware of this stuff all the time. And it's kind of interesting because that was never there before, right? But now if my breathing speeds up a bit, I'll notice. And if I'm in a room with somebody and I'm talking to them, I'll notice their breathing rate at the start of talking to them. And I'll also notice how interesting things happen, like when two people are together for a sufficiently long period and they're not too far apart in, say, state, their breathing will tend to sync up. I'll notice like the weird resonant effects and things like that as well. Like it's like a weird language. It's almost like that AI stuff, like training the AI on a new pattern that you can sort of expand your mind and your peripheral awareness to, stuff like that. Probably the same with you, Seppi.
Imagine like there's comes a point where like the you know, AI video camera is watching you while you experience something like a food or a, you know, acoustic space or whatever, and you're able to fine tune the space based on like, you know, okay, so you up this thing by 1 hertz, right? Like from 55 to 56 hertz, and it figures out where your optimum
level. It'll be exactly like that.
Yeah, where your optimum level of love is almost.
You'll be able to, and restaurants will be able to buy a thing that like constantly scans their customers and optimizes the lighting and everything, and like correlates the reviews based on all of these variables and constantly split tests and stuff.
Because I think on an individual basis, like you could probably get to the point where you can objectify what love actually is to some level. Like for example, this car that I bought, like I can, you know, compared to all the other crap that I have in terms of,
you're in love with your car.
I actually love this thing. Like I love getting in it, and I like having the top down and like.
Would you say you love it? You love it. Do you love it more or less than your wife and children?
Well, less, but different, I would say. But yeah, no, but I mean, like, I think like certain sound things I've, you know, truly found, you know, that I love certain things. This turned out to be an interesting thing. But I think the thing about getting into the wormhole, like the rabbit hole of like worrying about like, you know, visual and audio optimization is some of the things required to get to that are the sort of like purview of like luxury markets, like whether it's perfume. I think like I have like I think I picked up this Hermes perfume in Paris when I was there, like, you know, over the summer, and it smells phenomenal. And I don't even care about the brand or whatever. It's not like I'm sitting there going, oh, I'm going to buy it because the brand's expensive. It's just the smell, the cologne was very, very good. And I was like, okay, it's very good. I'll just get it. So, but like, I think like, you know, whether you're creating colognes or perfumes, whether you're creating like really, really ultra complicated speakers or, you know, buildings or cars or whatever, it gets quite expensive to get that effect and be able to replicate it in an object. Like there's probably some natural locations like in nature and whatnot that might have really great acoustics or whatever. But to try to like replicate that, the downside of going down this rabbit hole is, I would say that your expectations for what is good start to change substantially. So I agree with what you were saying about the training effect, in that you can train your expectations to want this stuff, though. It's sort of addicting at some level. Like if you heard like my speakers and room I have set up, you're like, holy shit, music just never is going to sound the same again now that I've heard it this way.
Yeah.
And that's a problem in a sense. So there's like, in some ways I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't go and try that out because I'm going to go and buy it next, you know, and like, why do I want to do that? So there is a limit to,
I don't know, but you have no other hobbies. So it's kind of like, it's your thing.
Yeah, it's your thing. It's your thing. So it depends on how far that down that thing you want to go. But I have found the point where it's like there are certain things where I've reached to sort of like I don't know if it's asymptotic to perfect or nirvana or whatever it is. Like that, like I can't imagine it getting dramatically better than, you know, where that is, you know. And so like if I go to sort of like an audio conference or SETI or some one of these like big conferences, and they have like all sorts of fancy new equipment, electronics and whatnot there, I felt like, you know, I know what near perfection sounds like, and so I'm already comparing everything to that. And then, you know, I have a sense of like the type of physical speaker, for example, a horn loaded speaker that I tend to prefer the sound of. And so therefore it almost like it doesn't matter how much better you make the you know, a regular tweeter speaker, it just won't sound this good. And so like I tend to have like you, what you end up doing is you start figuring out what your preferences are, and you're able to fine tune to that. Like truly like a you're truly just finding in life what you love is what you do with all of these sensory experiences. Like, and at some level you're like, okay, I'm kind of satisfied here with this. And so like, for example, I could go buy a, you know, a new pair of speakers any day of my life, right? But I don't go buy them every day.
Sadie, have you ever heard of the speaker like it's built like a snail? Like,
Yeah, that's the BMW Nautilus. That's called the Nautilus. It's okay. Like, I know what you're talking about, but that same company makes better ones, but I know what you're talking about. But yeah, it's a really nice piece of artwork, though. It looks really cool.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But what I wanted to say to you is you are talking from a very privileged point of view. Like,
yes, but at the same time, I didn't have shit growing up, so like, it's interesting that like the desire to create certain things, like let's say, for example, I want to have things sound a certain way, probably drove why I make money in the first place at some level, right? Because like in order to produce a building that does this, I've got to make enough money to build that building. So like when so some of these like passions sort of drive you to.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like when Steffi was a little kid, the other kids, everyone was asked like, what do you want to be when you're older? What do you want to have? And Steffi said he wanted to create like a sound womb to stay inside and just vibrate perfectly.
I'll tell you what happened. I met this kid. So we were like sixth grade and I met this kid out in the street, and it was kind of like semi ghetto area. It wasn't so great. but at the time I kid you not, this is what happened. Like my parents had like, my dad had gambled too much money on, buying what was at that time the equivalent of shit coins, buying like the dot-com bubble. So like he went and bought a bunch of stuff and the thing crashed, and then on top of that, like real estate markets were doing bad and he was underwater on some stuff, so we had to move to an area where like, you know, we it wasn't so hot. And anyway, so like I would go out and like wait for the school bus, and while waiting for the school bus, there's this one kid that would like try to sell me drugs every day. I'm like, no, man, I'm not interested. I'm not doing drugs. You know, I watch the commercials about don't do drugs, and I'm like, nah, it's probably not a good idea. And but the same kid, one day he comes up and he's like, hey, dude, do you want to buy these speakers from me? And I'm like, I was playing always with my dad's like old Sansui, like, you know, stereo kit or whatever. And it seemed attractive to me to buy these like he probably stole them from somebody or something. And I went and scrounged up some money, found some money somewhere in the house, and like bought these couple of speakers and stuffed them into my I unscrewed the cabinets and stuff and you know, wired these things up and whatever. And like I used to always play with electronics anyway, but like that was the sort of moment that I sort of like escalated the idea of like, you know, getting more and more into this sort of shit. And so, yeah, I mean, like, to some extent, I think your desires, like whatever those might be, probably play a role in like what you decide at some point you want to have as an income growing up or whatever. And you're like, ooh, I can't do all those things if I don't make this, this, and this. So probably it has some role, because like you said, it does come from a point of privilege, like in the sense that like, if you don't have money, there are certain things you just can't do.
Exactly. But I think everyone in this room at this point is having a very privileged life, like otherwise we weren't here listening.
That's a good outlook,
don't you think so, Bruce? No, Yep.
No, I think they're most people here are unemployed and looking for jobs, and they're biding time. And also, they have nothing. Like, what are you going to do when you wander the streets? Probably just listen to make yourself at least suffer a little bit less in that particular moment you're in, while you're trying to ignore the cold. In the same way that you drink alcohol in order to ignore the cold.
Yeah. Do you think so?
I think everyone here is psychologically desperate and looking for some kind of solution. And they're looking to me and Sefi for some kind of certainty or meaning or purpose in life. And otherwise, they are completely lost souls.
So you think you're a savior or something? Of yourself?
No, I mean other people. It's a natural dynamic that happens. I disagree with privilege. And also, we're all going to die. We yes, all share sure. that in common. So I don't think anyone is privileged.
No.
You know, Bruce, I did finish that. I went to Houston, Texas for several days. And I did this training on this robot, which...
surgical ones for pulmonary stuff or what?
Yeah. So there's a company called Intuitive Surgical. Just to for anyone who hasn't heard this, what I'm doing here. But there's a company called Intuitive Surgical, and some of you guys might have had operations on, what's called the Da Vinci robot, which is they're on version 3 now. The thing is freaking amazing. Like, surgeons are able to do all sorts of interesting things with really small incisions for major abdominal surgeries. And it's really impressive how much stuff can be manipulated with these arms and with joysticks, essentially, to control these. I went and trained on a thing called the Ion robot, which is a little bit newer thing, in the last 5 years. I felt like the technology was at the point where I should bother to learn it. If you go really, really early, the quality of these things is not that great. So I think it was it's right at that point where it's worthy of adoption and whatnot. So what this is you, and so what they set up at this training site was so it's a ventilator connected to a set of pig lungs. And the pig lungs are opening and closing, just you would expect if you have a human there. And then they attached it to this chest wall looking thing with rubber bands to kind of, you don't want the thing to blow up like a balloon. You want it to fill almost like a chest wall would. And it's an interesting little apparatus they produce there. And then what they do is they inject little blobs of jelly that are fluorescent, that has fluorescent dye inside of them. So that if you were to, get into the lung and get a biopsy of a lung, that you hit the mark, because when you get the biopsy sample, you spray it into a little piece of tissue, and then you can put a black light on it, and then you can see, hey, did I actually biopsy this tumor correctly or whatever? So it's a practice thing. So I spent the whole day kind of practicing with this thing and playing on it. And what it does is you have two components. One is called navigation, which is where you use a CT scan, and they scan the pig's lungs and they enter it into the software, and you're able to create a 3D model of all the little airways going all the way out to the outside of the chest. So all the way from your upper airway, your trachea, all the way down to the small airways that are physically possible to reach. You're mapping this, and then you're getting as close to the tumor or whatever as you can. And then you turn at a little angle, and then you stab a needle and you grab a biopsy of this thing. But the robotic part of it, why is this called a robot? Whereas it used to be we'd a normal bronchoscope, we'd actually do this by hand. You've probably seen this for colonoscopy and stuff like that, where you use your finger and you can turn the little camera one or two directions. You could rotate it and stuff. But this is interesting, and it has 360 degrees of rotation. It doesn't have only one angle of rotation. And the way it does this, it has a series of pulleys that are inside the tubing of the scope. And then what happens with this thing is the four pulleys that are in there, they respond to your interaction on the little scroll wheel or it's like a joystick type of thing. Almost feels like an early iPod, where you turn this little knob and you rotate, and you can turn left and right and up and down and go forward and backwards into the lung or out or come out. So they're really fascinating stuff. And but you can get a much more accurate, much farther out, smaller tumor than they used to.
It's for looking and also biopsies and also anything more?
You can do stuff let's say you find a tumor in there, you could leave a tungsten marker in there. And that way, if a surgeon has to come in afterwards and find that tumor with their hand, because you know, 1 centimeter tumor, you can't tell, like, just looking from outside of the lung how to operate on a thing, right? So you can mark it, and then that way they can use a radiographic techniques called fluoroscopy while you're operating. You can take out that tumor because you can see it, because you now left a little piece of, you know, like you left a little strip of metal in there, essentially, so that it can be found later. So, or you can like do radiation therapy to that spot too. So like, if they're not a person who can have surgery, you can blast it and stuff. So like a lot of these cancer therapies have gotten a lot better, especially for lung cancer. People are living a lot longer. And it's almost like some of them are getting to the point where they're treated almost like chronic diseases now. Like, you don't die of the cancer all that easily. So really interesting stuff. So it makes it more worthwhile to find these early, because you can do something about them and all. So yeah, just like, so there's privilege is one thing, but actually working hard to like keep up your skills and everything, it takes, like, you have to go do it pretty much. And there's just a constant process involved with any kind of professional career to try to maintain your abilities and all these kind of things. So like, while like talking about my stupid fancy car or whatever, like, that's just like something for fun, but like, I don't sit there and obsess about that all day. I have all sorts of
These, like in this particular case, was it the ion robot? Would you primarily use it for what, biopsies or something, taking out a bit of tissue to have a look?
Exactly. It's like a long snake that you can send down, and you can go and like grab little.
So what's the exact advantage of doing this? Is it, so I'm guessing, number one, like, the incision size and the recovery is a lot better.
So there's no incision here. You're just going down the airway. So you're just going down the endotracheal tube. So the person's on general anesthesia, you just send it down the tube while they're intubated, and you can dig all the way to the end of the lung. And so the magic of this is, compared to previous techniques, is the actual scope is much smaller. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to go out to much smaller airways. And these new needles are like, they make them like, they're almost curved needles. Actually, they are curved. They can go out of the end of a curved scope because they have this like filament that is, you know, rigid enough to get a biopsy, but like, you know, flexible enough to turn it. And so these, all these advanced materials that are coming out that they make this shit with, it's really cool.
And remind me about I never studied this, but I remember the learning about the lungs. It's sort of like a tree structure of segments or something. Is that right?
Exactly. So like, it starts in your trachea and it breaks into two segments. One is the right main bronchus, the left. See, it's like a tree. And then as you go farther down, you get like more branches from each of them. And so you call them like primary, secondary, tertiary branches, basically.
Right.
And this can I ask you a question?
Whoa. Yeah, hey, my turn. So the end of the device can curl into these branches. Is that correct?
Exactly. Like, the tip is actually, so what the tip has, what the entire length of the scope has, is four wires along the entire length. And imagine like controlling the tip like a puppet master. Mm-hmm. By shortening or lengthening any of these wires, the tip can actually rotate. And the other magic thing about this device is, in the previous technology, you would do it by hand, but like, if you let go of the scope, it would lose its tension. Like, it doesn't sit in the right spot. This is shape sensing. So the robot actually knows where it is in your body at any given moment. So the tip is like, in 3D space, can be maintained in a particular spot. So the difference is that, like, because the control of the curvature of a thing is done by the robot, even if the thing were to slightly be adjusted or moved, it's going to move back to its previous position automatically. Imagine like it's like it's self-centering to some extent, so you don't lose your spot that easily. Because when you're talking about like reaching a 1 centimeter target from, you know, like, think about it, you're sending down this thing that starts at your mouth all the way down to the bottom of your lower lobe of your lung. I mean, just imagine, like, there's a couple of feet there, right? So to be able to hit this, like, think about it like how oil drilling happens, you know, where you send this, like, you know, sideways drilling and things like that. You're going quite a long ways, and then you have to identify where this thing is. So one of the other things we do is we use what's called a radial ultrasound. So the tip of the probe has like this circular, like, you know, whirring thing that just literally rotating and creating a circular ultrasound. And when you get down there and you poke this thing out of the tip of the scope, you can actually tell, oh, look, there's the tumor there, and we're in the right spot. So you actually confirm it with these other techniques besides the 3D navigation. So it's like this confluence of like five or six technologies that had to exist in order to make all of this come together, which is the really cool part.
How does the extraction of a bit of tissue work then with this device?
All you're doing is you're sending down this long sort of like wire-like needle down the scope.
Like a suction thing.
Yeah. So like, so there's an operating channel in the middle of the tube. So the, it's like 20 millimeter or whatever it is. And what you have inside of there is you have the ability to send down like a forceps, which is like a little biopsy pincers, or you can send down like a brush. You can send down an ultrasound. You can send down a camera. So you just swap out depending on what you're trying to do. And previously, the old scopes, the camera used to be fixed. The difference here is the camera is not fixed. The camera can be removed. So they were able to make the scope much narrower to go down much further. And what you can do is you can remove, put the camera in, take it out. You can put in an ultrasound, take it out. You can put in like tools in there basically and you know, grab the biopsies or whatever. Pretty interesting stuff. Like, but the technology is so interesting in that like the company that made this stuff, like if you look at the quality of the industrial design of these things, I mean, I think it's like a $750,000 device approximately for like a hospital to buy it. And like, if you look at the design of the physical material design of this thing, I'm like a nerd for this sort of thing. So I'm like, I'm sitting there like caressing the thing and like playing with the damn, like the screens and everything. I'm like, holy shit. Like this is a lot that went into this device. And you know, you have to consider they don't sell that many of them, right? It's not like you're selling like a bunch of cars to somebody or you're selling whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what kind of profit margin or whatever they have, but like when you look at how much detail and how much perfection went into creating just the physical object this thing is, you're just blown away by the state of like, what do you call it? Industrial design and materials engineering and everything, like where we are today in 2023. Very impressive stuff. Like you don't get an opportunity to play with things of this caliber of industrial design by going to your local like electronic shop or even like even your cars are not built to this level of specificity. And even, you know, cars can be made pretty detailed, obviously. But this thing was just super sexy. Just the design work that went into creating it, I think, is what impressed me a lot.
Could I ask my question now?
Yeah, go ahead, Em.
Okay, so because I've got an autoimmune disease, I've got like pneumonia like 2 times a year. I'm now like having a double pneumonia, and because of that, I have like I think it's scarf tissue in the top of my lung on in my shoulder, but I cannot reach it because it's like a difficult point to shoot this instrument. Could that be like reaching there?
Yes, it can pretty much reach anywhere, just about anywhere in the lung now. But like, why do they want to do anything about this? It may not need anything. Depends on the situation. But
well, they are putting me in a CT scan every half year to see if it grows.
Oh, okay. So what they found is a little bit of scarred area at the upper part of your lung. And what we do with that is, you know, like we worry that that could be a possible lung cancer, especially in a woman, even if you're not a smoker. So like some adenocarcinoma. So what they'll do for a while, for every 6 months, for 2 years, is they'll just keep scanning you again and see if it's growing at all and then make a decision. There's also what's called a PET CT scan, which is an interesting thing. I'm not sure if they have it locally for you, but it actually lights up. Like what they do is they inject glucose into your body.
Yes, I have had it. Yes.
Did that show anything? Or?
Yes, it will. Yes, I saw the screenshot, the pictures of it, and it's dark. It's like a shadow there. And it made me want to feel like I wanted to pee. If I were in the tube, like it's very warm. Your body is feeling warm.
Oh, you're talking about when they injected you the dye.
Yeah.
I was like, I thought you said you saw the lesion in the lung and you felt like peeing. I was like, wait, what?
No. No, the feeling of what they injected me was
people
feeling
say that.
Yeah. So so now I'm under control, like, but it's a very difficult region in on the top of your lungs. And I don't know if they have the what you described, the real precise tools, except in my
there's something slightly different, and it's called a PET CT, and this is kind of interesting. What they what you do is you take glucose, and basically sugar. Our cells use sugar, of course, and what you do is you label this with a radioactive marker, and then what you do is you inject this sugar into a person's body, and then you scan the lung afterwards. We call this a positron emission tomography, or PET scan, they call it. But it's the magic is in the like the you know the radio labeled sugar. Tumors basically take up glucose much faster than regular tissue because they're dividing quickly, and you know they this is just what they do. So what you do is you give this, and you wait a period of time, and then you scan the lungs. And then if that lights up like orange, or they usually, you know, on the images, they color it orange or red or whatever. And then it suggests it's metabolically active. And then you might go in earlier for something like that. So some types of tumors, like if you have something there, like that's what this ion robot's for. Let's say you found a small lesion and you wanted to reach it without causing any other trauma anywhere else. It's a really kind of low invasive thing. You go in there and you get a biopsy. You see if it's cancer. If it is, then you remove that part of the lung if necessary. If it's not, then you leave it alone. So some combination of PET CTs and these new robot techniques are really going to, like, I think, substantially change the nature of, like, lung and chest cancer diagnosis over the next 10 to 20 years. Because, like, these things aren't available everywhere yet.
I know, yes. Yeah. It would be awesome, like, if because there are dying so many people, because I think smoking isn't like, well, 20 years ago, everyone was smoking. There were cigarettes on the table when there was someone has a birthday. There were cigarettes just in a little pot on the table, so everyone could take one. Well, I hope I'm glad that that isn't not there anymore, and you can only buy cigarettes here at the gas station. It's everywhere forbidden to buy it.
I think lung cancer stuff are going to go down a lot, because even in America, a lot of people don't smoke anymore. People have switched to vaping and stuff, and vaping is probably dramatically safer than cigarettes or anything. But like, a lot is changing. And Bruce, you know, I told you my son was like working on, you know, applying to some colleges, some programs after his undergraduate thing or whatever. So his work he does is in right now in undergrad is like biology and neuroscience type stuff, probably something similar to what you did. And so he decided, you know what, I'm just going to go and just apply for the craziest like things I could possibly find and see what happens. So he's like looking at bioengineering, which is basically like understanding like the creation of medical robots, medical devices. So on the one hand, he like applied for some different masters and things. I think there are some places in the country like Stanford and Georgia Tech and MIT and stuff that do some of this stuff. But there's also like there were some job openings at like Neuralink, which is the Elon Musk company that is like connecting devices to people's spinal cords and whatnot to try to like be able to like, let's say, control your lower limbs if you're paralyzed and things like that. So he's like, you know, I might go do the Neuralink job because instead of paying for a master's degree at like the rate of like 80 to 100K a year, like I can just go and get paid 120K for interning at this thing. And what he would be doing is he'd be writing some sort of scientific papers for them, but also he would be implanting. So the last 3-4 years, he's been like, I don't know, like operating on small animal, like flies and things. He's been operating on brains to like from a neuroscience perspective. And so he has like some of the requisite like skill set to go do that, apparently. So he applied for it. We'll see what happens.
Some of the requisite psychopathy.
Yeah, we'll end up having like neat stories from what the hell he's doing in Neuralink, implanting little devices into things and whatever. I don't know. I'm not sure if he's going to get the job or whatever, but
I think it's cool. I think he'll probably learn more as well.
Just imagine being around all these people that are doing all sorts of strange and new
You get a nice mixture of sort of obviously the like the super genius people, but also the people who are willing to practically do stuff and take risks, which is a really nice mix.
Yeah, exactly. Like imagine, like I think Musk's whole idea was to like have really, really, really big ideas that, you know, super geniuses want to come hang out and like, you know, play around in, and like you create a sandbox with a bunch of other geniuses in it. You know, who knows what comes of it, type of thing.
And it's actually really hard to find those kind of people outside of, say, some very exclusive high end college or something, like in the wild, unless you go to a company like this. So yeah, I'd recommend it for him if he's young, right? He's like what, 20 or something?
Yeah, he's 20, so he ought to have plenty of time to kind of play around in.
Is the Neuralink like the brain implant? I just watched the video of it. Is that already like that small that they can really like do it without any other devices around the head?
The general concept here is like implantable devices where you are able to read what your neurons are saying, like say for example the neurons that go to your arm or your leg or down your spinal cord, to interpret what those things are, what signals they're trying to send, and on the one hand like just interpret what those are, what kind of patterns are present there when say for example you try to lift your leg or move your arm, and then translate that into computer code so you can then like analyze it, you know, make graphs and things and make pretty pictures. The flip side of that would be, okay, like can we use that same concept to then trigger those nerves to do the same thing, let's say for example move your leg or your arm. So on the one hand, it's like the sensing part of it. The second part is like, can you interpret that and make it do something? And it looks like they're making quite a bit of interesting progress. And I think especially the new sort of AI and machine learning methods, because you can now, you know, so once you can interface with, say, like a severed spinal cord, and you can see what kind of impulses are coming to that spinal cord, you know, machine learning can then go and say, okay, like, really analyze those patterns very closely and determine like which of these things should be trigger in order to make your leg move. What happens if I want to make the you know this part of your leg move or that part, or you know make your, you know, extend your foot or flex your at the foot or whatever. You know, how do you interpret those signals and like turn that into actual movement? So I think like their initial goal, like just from a pure like maybe like a medical perspective, would be to solve a problem like paraplegia or, you know, maybe severed
or something like say somebody is blind, to transmit the impulses directly to the brain from some
right or another element is like, I forgot to mention, is like just like if you had robotic legs. So robotic robot building has gotten quite impressive if you've seen all the different stuff out there now from both Tesla, from Boston Dynamics or whoever. But if you are able to then read the mind or read the spinal cord information, and maybe you don't have legs that work anymore because you're amputated or something in a car accident or whatever. But you know, you want to be able to sort of like add these robotic appendages, but you want to be able to control them with your mind, not by like, you know, remote control or something. Like you need to interpret the neurologic responses. And so it's a pretty big deal. Like for quite some time, like a lot of neurosurgeons and whatever, like, ah, oh, this is bullshit. Elon Musk is an idiot, whatever. And like, you know, and then the more they produce and the more they come up with, it's like, wait a minute, maybe then he's not an idiot. You know, so like, I used to think he was fucking nuts when he was trying to create like a new car industry in America. And yet here we are, you know, Tesla's the number one like electric car in the country or whatever. And they're profitable too. Like they're cash flow positive. It's just like,
it's miraculous. Interesting though. It like has a lot of, like people fear it as sort of this weird dystopian thing, but it does definitely have a lot of wholesomeness in the restoration stuff, which is basically like this. There are electrical signals and often these systems of transmission are broken, and you can probably bridge it with a system like this, right? Like say if, I don't know, I was talking about blindness. If there's somebody who is blind and somewhere along the pathway, the visual pathway, like the optical nerves or somewhere in the retina or wherever else back, you know, towards the brain side.
Like your optic nervous system.
If there's something fucked along the way, you should be able to bridge it because you can effectively take the same impulses or signals and bridge the gap, which is really interesting and cool.
Yeah, like if you like imagine if you're blind, like even if you had a rudimentary view of the world, even if it wasn't perfect, like, you know, you've seen the AI sort of like interpretations so of the brain scans, you know, how like it's like, sort of like it kind of figures out you're looking at a giraffe, but you know, it's not exactly the exact same thing, but like it's enough to have a better life. You know, like you don't have to have perfection to make.
I would see it sort of like the movement from Game Boy to the latest PS5 or whatever, right? Like you can have a Pokemon vision for now, and then after that you'll move up to something approximating reality.
Right. It just gets deeper and deeper as you go. But yeah, there's not really a limit to this because technically the size of neurons is kind of your limit. So if you can create similar structures in silico, there are quite a few companies, well, I don't know about quite a few, there's some companies working on creating neurologic tissue on a silicon surface, which is kind of interesting. So this idea of either computing using neurologic systems off outside of actual bodies versus the flip side of that would be using the system to send data to your mind, let's say because your ears don't work or your vision doesn't work, or like completely new things we haven't even thought of, like maybe you can, like, you know, you have echolocation or some shit, like, you know, like there's no reason why once you have sort of AI sort of like interpreting massive quantities of data, you couldn't convert that to sort of like neurologic patterns that your traditional brain can see or hear or feel in some way.
Would you know on you know, on modern games, I'm not a gamer, but I remember this from the past. You could choose like the degree of anti-aliasing and the detail of different things and stuff like that. Theoretically, I suppose you could go in that direction too, and you could give people the optionality of having like a drug trip experience of the world, where edges are more defined or like certain things are more clarified, but the others are vaguer. Or maybe someone really hates a certain color, you could just rule it out. You can do weird stuff. Like if you have the ability to bridge and interpret signals and modify somebody who's broken, you also have the ability to modify and change somebody who's not broken, right? In terms of the perceptual system, which is kind of fascinating.
I have the suspicion that like the ability to create like spontaneous virtual worlds using some of these, like, you know, these splatter techniques and, you know, these Gaussian distribution techniques and AI techniques, like you have to imagine you're going to be able to create some interesting sort of like just visual experiences that might be quite therapeutic to people in ways. Cause a lot of the baseline work, like we talked about, like the acoustics work and the visual work in terms of how to like use sights and sounds to sort of modify your brain state, you know, you can now like really put that to the test by creating a whole new series of like experiences that you couldn't have before. Like a really interesting like technological innovation has been just look how much Apple has done with these little AirPod headphones. They're quite good. Like even for someone that knows a lot about like audio equipment and this and that, the acoustic quality of those things and the ability to sort of like silence noise coupled with like, you know, partial transparency and coupled with like all these, even the 3D space stuff that I don't know if you've played with these headphones much, but like you in a movie or whatever, you can get like a 3D spatial audio sort of sense. But quite a lot has been learned, like previously, from vision engineers and acoustic engineers. Like when you add AI to this, it's like the capabilities are going to be mind-boggling, I think. But in some ways, I think people are going to go nuts. Like it really will cause like psychopathies and sociopathies and all sorts of things to flourish. On the other hand, if built like specifically with a lot of like care in mind, they start, because these things really behave more like medical devices than they do entertainment devices at some level. So it's like, if you're not building them with the care and caution of a medical device, you're going to get all of the neurotic behavior out of people that you want out of these things too. So like, I'm not optimistic about that part. I think there'll be like a nasty learning phase where a bunch of people get fucked up by these things long before any kind of like, you know, like the careful people come up with the good stuff. That's my theory, at least.
Oh, I want to say one thing and then I'm going to leave. We have a university, it's called in Delft, it's a technical university. They made a robot suit for people who are paralyzed and they combine it with brain activity. And the first man who tried this was in June of 23. And it worked, and he was paralyzed from he was diving in water and there was no water.
What does this thing look like? Is it like a little vehicle or what is the?
No, he's wearing like a suit.
Oh, I saw that. Yes, I think I saw that.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and they combine it with like brain activity. So he's steering. He's activating the suit himself by thinking of walking. I can't explain it really out in technical words, but it's from a university in Holland who made.
And this is just from surface level activity, right? Like you're not, there's no surgical thing inside the person's body, is there?
No.
Okay.
No.
So yeah, like, I mean, it's amazing that like some of the robot control techniques have simply happened from surface level activity without having to do any implants and whatnot. And that's where like the Neuralink thing has a potential to be really more like, I guess, more detailed or more, mm-hmm. the resolution will be better and maybe your movements will be mm-hmm. more accurate.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's amazing how much they're done with just the surface. Yeah. Do you know what they're monitoring? Are they like putting electrodes on your legs or are they like, how does it work? Do you know?
I know about this because I have some things myself with walking and so I'm very interested in it. So I can send you, if you want, I can send you the story about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. A lot of interesting stuff coming up.
Oh, it's in Dutch. So I have to think if there's some translation.
Google Translate time.
Yeah. I will do a little bit research, and if I found it, I will send it to you. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, by the way, Bruce, you know, when I was in France last month, or in June, I'm sorry, I was using the little Google Translate app to read all the menus, like anytime I didn't know French or whatever, just like push a button, and it's pretty impressive how quickly you can get your meals.
It is very cool. Yeah.
Have you played with it in any of the countries in Europe or like where you have to?
Which... No, I've been with someone who did though. Yeah, it is cool. Very cool.
Although I found driving in France quite simple. I didn't need to have any special. Like it's pretty straightforward. I don't think you really need to know a whole lot of French to get around, really.
Sophie, I'm afraid I need to go and eat now, but I'll be back in an hour or two.
Okay. If you'd like another,
just like, yeah, it's like 5 and I haven't eaten anything.
Yep. Or like we can catch up tomorrow.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. You're not sure what your schedule looks like yet, huh?
I don't know if I like you or not tomorrow.
Yeah, I hate you too. So we'll figure it out.
Oh, Sophie, the project is called March, like in the word of walking, March. So, and there's lots of things to find, but it's only in Dutch. So probably if you are going to search it, university,
like maybe check YouTube and like watch some videos or something.
Yeah, there are videos. University Delft, D-E-L-F-T, Dutch, Holland, and Project March. I think you can find lots March. Of things.
Yeah, yes. I'll take a look. Take a look for sure. I don't know if Yura's awake or not. He's kind of a listener over there. I was going to say, I watched the crazy YouTube video he posted for us. I'm going to retweet that. I'm going to find it. Or maybe he can find it. Like, did you watch that, Bruce? Did you see it?
I don't think I saw it.
so he posted a video in like a group chat thing, and it was like this guy that created this website where he was pretending to give away free Bitcoin or some nonsense, and he kind of modified the user interface such that, like, oh, there's Euro right there. Maybe you can tell us. Euro, are you there?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like a, I think it was something like people had QR codes for Bitcoin that they like bought over the counter or something. And then he leaked these online or somewhere. I skipped the first part. But basically it's people who think they found something for free and like they're scamming to try and get this Bitcoin. And then he built this elaborate system where it tracks everything people do inside it and makes them go through like robocalls and ask them to do different things like draw things for human verification and other sorts of
Yeah, it was like you have to draw a picture of a rat to beat our CAPTCHA so we can make sure you're a human and not a robot. And then you have all these dimwits like drawing, you know, funny little goofy rat pictures and with terrible artwork. And no, it's amazing the level of like how much some of these guys would like do weird shit to get the supposed free Bitcoin. Like they were I think it's worth watching it just to see the extent. It was kind of like a little psychological experiment. The idea is to like put you through all these weird tests to see what you would do and how long you would wait and how long you'd deal with robo phone calls and whatever to get the so-called free money and hang on with customer service on the phone. It's just the weirdest thing.
Was it just to see how far people would go? Or did they actually get anything in the end?
No, it's just to see how far people go. It's just like, yeah. I don't know. Was it Euro? Were they trying to like capture people that are scammers? Not capture them, but like,
yeah,
them doing stupid shit? Or
in the end, what happened was because they, you know, they do all the social engineering, and the guy, he's like a streamer, I believe. He hops on calls. So between these robocalls, he'll go on and with a voice changer, he'll actually talk to them. And he'll then scam them and get them to reveal their seed phrases, passphrases. And then it turns out that after he'd done this for a while and he had a team, that some of the wallets they got access to were involved in scams. And then they were able to pass on to like investigator authorities and recover some funds and stuff. And there was like old women who phoned in, or at least one that was like kept getting scammed, and he hopped on a call for her and figured it out. And then, you know, tried to recover her funds, etc. So it really got quite involved. But it started as like this maze that all the scammers just sort of got trapped in, like a normal honeypot sort of thing. Like you might set up a server and it might get millions of hits, but with actual people and user interfaces and captures and possible captures and draw me a picture of a snake with a hat. Oh, and they had this maze that's fucking impossible to solve. And you can see the people trying it.
Interesting. It's interesting how far people go and the weird like cognitive biases and things that happen. You see it in things like airdrop farmers, where a blockchain or a protocol is promised a certain airdrop or the chance of an airdrop or something, and they just work for like hundreds of hours to get these things with no guarantees at all. And it's like the sunk cost of having invested 10% of those total hours somehow propels them to do more and more and more and more and more. And it's like, well, if I'm this far in, then I better continue, no matter how ridiculous it is and no matter how unguaranteed it is.
For everyone who's listening, I posted it up top, so you can kind of bookmark it on YouTube or whatever, watch it. It's pretty impressive. I think you're right. Like some of the principles that were like he's discovered about how people behave or just whatever they do, it like that would make a really good like baseline for a blockchain-based or just an internet game, just period. And I think like, yeah, that game design I was putting together before, you're like this. Yeah. Like some of the mechanics of this, certainly I think there's something to learn about human psychology to game design work from that.
Something any crypto project can learn like a lot from this.
Oh yes.
I hate those sort of things because I could look at a progress bar all day. So those things are like crack, and I think that's
exactly
kind of a horrible thing, but it would be wildly successful. So on the other hand,
yeah, every protocol needs like some button that you have to push for some reason that it's worth you pushing it at least once a day. It's like that scene in that TV show Lost where that guy Desmond or whatever is under the ground. He has to push that button every 24 minutes or he's not sure if the world's going to end or some shit. And he's like, he keeps pushing the button every 24 minutes because he has no choice, or I think it's 24 minutes, something like that. And he wasn't willing to discover what happens if he doesn't push the button. So he keeps like, you know, intently waiting for that thing and make sure he pushes it right on time and whatever. This reminded me of that situation, but, yeah, like how do you capture attention in and how do you keep people coming back for more? How do you keep it fun? And how do you like how do you like foster addiction is definitely like part of the game, I think.
Steffi, have you seen his other videos? I don't think he's just a streamer. I think he's like actually a white hack hacker. And he does like he hacks like Indian like Bangladeshi, like those farms where they just basically try and scam older people all day. So if you watch at his other YouTube videos, it's pretty
counter
funny.
Scams. He counter
yeah,
scams.
Yeah, he counter scams. Yeah, oh, and like cool. He records it all, and like the guys will be like screaming and like, you know, Bangladeshi at him and stuff, and he's like taking all their. He like literally shuts down an entire. He like filmed it all too. They like sent like a glitter bomb there and stuff to like and like recorded it and like it exploded inside the call center, and it's pretty funny.
I'll try to watch some of those. I need to find some of them. Like, yeah, it's super interesting, the psychology of these folks. We'll see. But anyway, Bruce, yeah, you're trying to get to sleep?
No, I'm just going to go and eat, and then I'll be back in an hour or two.
Okay, yeah. We'll do the same. All right, okay. Catch you later, guys. All right.
Farewell, friend.
There's this principle in Taoism where it's just like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, like just inevitably kind of starts to happen. There's this principle in like Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, inevitably it kind of starts to happen.
Chirping on the bird app, listening to nerds flap, wondering why the fuck my timeline's so cursed. It's like everybody's holding heavy bags in Web3, that's why they can't fly, they just drowning in the bird bath, fishing for some dry powder. Watch how we ignite the tower, blowing up their bank accounts for getting out of fight the power. Y'all don't even realize how deep this shit goes. They preach an open source, but don't listen to the code, and now it's mutiny, community, uprise. There's no more humility, futility, plus size. Motherfuckers leaking from the wrench down to the bare metal. Which side of the line you bleeding out on when the dust settles? Motherfucking west side shit, needle and noose. Sticking with my armory, Yambato and Bruce. Repping psychedelic artistry, believing the truth. Like these motherfuckers even need a reason to sue? GM fam.
Really? Worth all the effort? Is it really worth all the fighting? Is it really worth all the drama? And the answer, I think, is a clear no.
We started using Zoom, now we finna zoom out. Teaching all these plebidites what this game's really all about. Little baby bitches when they choose to have fits. All you're left with is kibble when you lose all them bits. And that kibble's just sawdust, the shit is all rust. Not a great look, you're what we'd call all nuts. And I for one did not see that coming. Cracking open books, yo, that's a lot of money. Meanwhile, over here rewiring features. More critical thinking, less knee-jerk. More evolution, less shit. Coin preachers pretending to be teachers, y'all just predatory leeches. I mean, please, just look at the track record. A bunch of VC rap fucks sucking up the cheddar. The recipe is two steps, rinse and repeat. Now we all in your butts and we bring in receipts. GM fam, have a seat.
If you're listening to this, my plea to you would be like, don't have to take a side on it. Just say like, is it really worth this war of attrition? It might cost us a lot more than what can be gained by like fighting this to the bitter end. And sometimes it's better to just like move on.
Channel spaces.